Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Get ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And welcome inside the playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Yep, it is a short week this week, kids, for us here in the playbook anyway. Just today, then we're off tomorrow since they're closing the offices here tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time for the Thanksgiving holiday, which means that's us. So while PFW guys will be here from 12 to 2 tomorrow, we're going to take the holiday off. We're going to let Doc and Brian and Two Gender and anybody else who needs the time off to get some well-deserved time off tomorrow. So we're going to try to cram basically a whole week's worth of shows into today. So I realize that you still maybe want to kind of decipher and kind of dissect and analyze a little bit the 31-14 win over the Jets on Sunday. But I also want to begin turning the page not only to obviously the Thanksgiving holiday, and of course we wish everyone with an earshot here a very happy Thanksgiving holiday. Make sure that it's a safe holiday no matter where you are, especially if you are traveling. But we're going to cram everything into one here. So we're going to start talking a little bit about the Saints today as well. Russell Baxter, our NFL research coordinator for ESPN, he is going to join us today since he normally... Yep. He normally comes in on Thursdays. Obviously, Thursday is the holiday. He is unavailable tomorrow as well. So he said, how about Tuesday? And I said, come on in.
Well, Thursday is also game day for him, too.
Well, he's got three NFL games to, basically get done on Thursday. I don't know when we'll have to ask him when he's going to be able to, maybe maneuver in his turkey dinner. My guess is at ESPN, if there are three games to be played that day, my guess is they probably have it catered. But he'll probably try to find some time at home on Thursday as well. So there are three NFL games on Thursday, and we'll talk about those. We'll talk about the weekend, and we'll get you set up as well for Monday night's encounter with the Saints. Now, a couple of things. First things first. I realize that part of... Oh, I don't know. I guess part of the aftermath of the win over the Jets had to do with an alleged perceived disrespecting Rex Ryan. Thank you. Got to get the brain kickstarted today. No caffeine this morning, so that's it's playing havoc. I personally, when the play happened on Sunday, and I'm talking about the late deep pass from Brady to Moss. I think it was like a 3rd and 6. There was like 30 seconds left in the game. In case you're, wondering what I'm talking about here, my guess is that you probably already know. The first initial response that I had was, uh-oh, well, there's going to be hell to pay for that one. And then I realized on the play, and then Albert Breer of the Boston Globe, I guess it was just a short while ago, in fact, that he just blogged this, but he was looking at the tape again of the game, so I got to give him full credit for it here. I guess the Jets sent 7 players on that 3rd and 6. They were rushing 7 on a meaningless 3rd and 6 play with 30 seconds to go. Patriots had basically, one play to run here. And they sent 7 rushers. So what the heck does that say? It kind of tells me that maybe the Jets were deciding, screw this. We're going after Brady. And he's crying about being disrespected? I in the aftermath, I kind of scratched my head over that one after the game, and I'm thinking, chalk one up to the rivalry. Maybe this is the Patriots sending the Jets a little message. Maybe this was Tom Brady and Randy Moss sending Darrell Revis, who, by the way, had a great game against Randy Moss on Sunday. Maybe this is their way of sending him a little message. But as it turns out, upon further review, that was the Patriots' basic answer to the Jets sending 7 players at Brady, rushing 7 on that play. You got to be kidding me. Meaningless. Game over. And you're rushing seven? Why would you do that unless your intent was to harm someone? And if it's just, hey, we're playing football here.
Ridiculous.
You know, if you're thinking, oh, they're just playing football, well, then that's all the Patriots are doing. They're just responding to the defensive package that you had coming at him. I mean, come on. So this whole disrespecting card, I believe Rex Ryan about as far as, I believe him about as much as I could throw him, for about as far as I could throw him. Unbelievable. I like this guy less and less. At first, you know, when the season started, I thought he was great for the Jets. I thought he'd be great for the division. He would certainly add spice to the rivalry. You know, liked him a little less so after the Jets won in week two. But I'm thinking, you know what? Okay, great. We need some juice in this rivalry again because the Patriots for the last, you know, decade or so have been beating the crap out of teams in the AFC East. I said, this is probably good for the division. Well, right now, I'm starting to develop a genuine hatred for Rex Ryan because he talks out of both sides of his mouth. Listen, pal, we're all smart here. We notice things. You're going to send seven, then guess what? I'm going to try to beat you deep. You're very lucky you have Darrell Revis. You're very lucky you have Darrell Revis. Because if you didn't have Revis covering Moss, the Patriots would have hung 50 on you. Okay, they would have. They hung half a hundred. Probably should have anyway, except for the third quarter brain fart that they had. All right, so now I'm off my soapbox. But I wanted to bring that up off the top because, you know, all I've been seeing is, you know, Rex is crying, Rex is playing the disrespect card. Mule muffins! It's just not so. It's just not the case. Okay, you want a rivalry? Now you got it. Yes, the Jets won in week two, so to have a rivalry, you must obviously win your fair share of games in a matchup. Well, the two teams went 1-1 against each other this year. So until next year, J-E-T-S, until next year. But I'm not buying this disrespected stuff. That's just stupid. Love to hear your thoughts. Webradio@patriots.com is our email address, of course. 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number. We'll also get to, I believe, some conference calls from today as well here at Gillette. There's a lot of guys who are going to get in and get out over the course of the week with the Thanksgiving holiday, so we're going to get into some of those, in addition to Russell Baxter coming up at the top of the 3 o'clock hour, as per the norm on Thursday shows. We'll have that today as well. It is Nitpick Tuesday. So we'll take some time to sort of examine the win over the Jets and try to pick a few nits. That's my biggest one to pick, to be honest with you, is Rex Ryan playing the disrespect card. That's the biggest load of crap I think I've heard all season. It's just ridiculous. What else did you see? What else did you notice from Sunday? Obviously, the guys were talking about it here on PFW a short while ago about, you know, what's the reason behind the third quarter malaise, the third quarter funk that they seem to be going into. And I really do believe strongly that it has at least partially to do with the fact that there's less demonstrative veteran leadership out on the field and in the locker room. There aren't enough guys out there to yell and to scream and to, you know, and I think every team needs that. And I think this team has had that. There's fewer of those guys this year. And I think every team, I think this Patriots team is used to having that. There's no one out there to keep them focused on the task at hand. There's no one out there to say, hey, don't look at the scoreboard. Pedal to the metal. Now, I think some of that belongs to the coaching staff. And I think the coaching staff has to pick up some of that responsibility in the play calling. I think that they've just gone too conservative when they get a lead. I want to see this team take its foot and step on the opponent's jugular. Like they did against the Titans earlier this year. Like we thought they were doing against the Colts until inexplicably they get, you know, third and fourth quarter, you know, brain cramps. I just think that's part of it. And once you allow a team, you know, football is such a game of emotion and it's such a game of riding the tidal wave. You know, it's really a huge momentum game, I think more so than maybe any other sport that's out there. I just emotional momentum, especially. That I think the Patriots have had a tendency to allow teams to build up momentum on them, and they have a hard time quelling that momentum. And I think that's part of the problem here. The other part of the problem has to do with play calling. They button down the hatches way too quickly. They need to remain aggressive. They need to keep taking shots up the field. They need to keep doing whatever it is that they do best. And obviously, Wes Welker had the game of a lifetime. Shoot, he even had, a career's worth of game for some guys. Catches and yards for some guys. Against the Jets on Sunday. How can you not continue, to gun the accelerator when you have a weapon like that? The play calling's got to be, it's got to be amped up in that situation. The veteran leadership has to step up and be vocal. And I think part of that is the defense plays too soft. I think the defense stops attacking. And whether or not that's Belichick or whether or not that is, Dean Pease or whether or not that's, a guy like Brandon Merriweather trying to step up and make a couple of plays. I mean, obviously, Lee Bodden had a super game. But, frankly, the Patriots squeak that one out. Okay, kids? They squeak this game out if Mark Sanchez didn't blow. If he wasn't terrible, the Patriots probably are lucky to win that game about 20-14. Maybe even 17-14. That's what I'm thinking. If Sanchez wasn't so flippin' horrible on Sunday. And I guess maybe that's my second biggest nitpick in addition to the whole Rex Ryan, debacle. That this team is very, very lucky that it won the way it did. Everybody's thinking, easy win. You win by 17. On to the Saints. Hey, let's beat the Saints. Okay. Can't beat the Saints, not going to beat the Saints, playing the same way you did against the Jets. You do realize that, right? That isn't happening. Sloppy, conservative, not aggressive, lazy. I don't know, lazy is probably a relative term. That may be a little harsh. Let's just say lazy in the play calling. I think it just got comfortable. And even though the Jets really didn't make much of a game of it, I don't think you ever felt totally uncomfortable like, hey, here they come, even after it was, 24-14 with that first drive of the third quarter. And I called it. It was 24-7 at halftime. And I said, they're going to score in the opening drive. They're going to score in the opening drive. And we're going to all have to, get sweaty palms and have to get ants in our pants, move around our seat and get a little nervous. And, I think because the Patriots are going to allow them to do that. And sure enough, it happened. It's predictable. Too predictable. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe the Patriots are becoming too predictable in several different facets on offense and defense. That would be another nitpick. I really think that some of this comes from play calling, and some of it comes from decision making on the field, whereas I think the decision making on the field will take care of itself in time. The play calling is a little bit disconcerting. I realize that Bill O'Brien is probably getting more and more, he's probably getting more and more leeway. I'd like to see him, either one of two things happen. Either A, that there's a different system of checks and balances in there on his play calls, or B, you just turn him loose. And maybe he can develop into the next Josh McDaniels. Because I think the Patriots really miss some of that ingenuity, some of that aggressiveness that Josh brought to the table. Now, I've heard all kinds of rumors, and I've had several fans come up to me and say, hey, Charlie Weiss gets fired from Notre Dame. Should the Patriots bring him back as offensive coordinator? I frankly believe that would probably be, as long as Charlie would be agreeable to it, he doesn't really need the money. He's going to be taken care of for a while, I think, with the money that Notre Dame is going to have to use to buy him out. I actually don't think that would be a bad call. Charlie's going to want to rehab, his damaged coaching reputation, certainly as a head coach. You know he's going to want to have fun coaching football again. You know he's probably going to feel confident in taking chances because he still has Brady back there. So if they decide to go that route, why not? Why not take a chance at Charlie? You think? Yes? No? What do you think? Webradio at Patriots.com. Another way, that, of course, that you can reach us is 508-543-7482 by telephone here today. All right, so I've given you a bunch of things to chew on, and I hope that you'll choose one of them and then clamp onto that and then spit it out and send us a response one way or the other based on your thoughts. Do you have another nitpick from Sunday's game? If you do and I'm missing a spot, by all means, fire away. Our favorite whipping boy, Lawrence Maroney, actually had a pretty decent game. Yeah. Had a decent game. Not a great game, a decent game. A couple of good games in there. Still saw some tap dancing. You know, I think part of that is because sometimes he just can't move some of those, you know, can't move some of those linemen out of the way. I think I've got a new favorite whipping boy. Maroney's going to stay a whipping boy until we see Lawrence Maroney, you know, pop a couple of 100-yard games in there. But I think part of the problem for Lawrence is that it's not his problem that the line just doesn't run block very, very well. The avenues are clogged. The holes are not there. I don't know if that is, you know, a byproduct of playing up the middle with Dan Copen. I don't know if that, you know, frankly, I am not a big fan of Nick Kazzer. Haven't been a fan, really, ever of Nick Kazzer. I would be one of those that would like to see, when Matt Light comes back, I'd like to see him move to right tackle and keep Sebastian Vollmer at left tackle. I think that gives the Patriots their absolute best offensive line. And then if you, you know, get into an injury situation, at least Kazzer can play the position. But I think he's a terrible run blocker. I think his pass protection is adequate at best. He does have a tendency to get beat by speed rushers, you know, around that right side. Fortunately, that's not Brady's blind side. If he were the left tackle, hoy yay yay. I don't think we'd have Tom in the shape that we have him in now. So I think that there's definitely some improvement to be had. I think the Patriots should look for a right tackle. And if Matt Light has some career left in him, I think he should consider a career move here. Because I think that would help prolong his career. Because Vollmer's going to take over that left tackle spot. This is Wally Pipp all over again. Vollmer shouldn't give it back. Shouldn't give it back. It's Lou Gehrig taking over for Wally Pipp all over again. I think that would make the Patriots' offensive line better. But they don't run block very well at all. They just don't. I just don't think that the holes are there, which is why we see Maroney stutter step. I tried looking at it from end zone cameras. I don't see the holes opening, guys. I just don't. And when you couple the fact that when you do have a crease in the opening, it's only there for the just smallest of a split second, and Maroney not being a normal north-south kind of guy, it only compounds the problem. You know, Maroney's trying to learn. I'll give him that. I don't know if he's the right fit, though, for what the Patriots need in New England. I think the Patriots, see, I think part of the problem here is that they're still teaching blocking techniques for the big do-it-all bruiser tailback that they've had in the past, like the Antoine Smiths and, you know, the Corey Dillons. That's the way that this makeup offensively on that line, I believe, is there because they can just blast through anything like dynamite. Patriots don't have one of those blast-through-anything-like-dynamite backs in Lawrence Maroney. Therefore, blocking techniques need to be done differently. Run blocking, I think, needs to be shored up or taught differently. What do you think about that? I don't see the openings. Do you? Anybody else see what I see? I'd be curious to know how you feel. Either you go out and you find you another, find you a back that can be one of those, you know, bell cows, or you figure out a way to get smaller, slightly smaller, but eminently more quick-footed offensive linemen. That may be the only way to do this. I think if you found quicker offensive linemen, I think the holes would open up potentially a little bit more for a guy like Maroney, and he could hit the spots. Just a thought. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. We certainly would be remiss here if we didn't recap and opine just a little bit on Wes Welker's day. One of the more remarkable individual performances, I think, that any Patriots fan has seen in the 50-year history of this franchise. Single-day performances. Remarkable. Second most catches in a game in team history. The most in a non-overtime game in team history. 15 catches, 192 yards, setting the team record for most catches in the non-overtime game. The second highest single-game total overall. Troy Brown had the team record of 16 in overtime against Kansas City back in 2002. His 15 catches top his previous career high of 13 that he had against Philadelphia in 2007. What a day. And the third highest receiving yard total in team history, the most ever for a Patriot receiver in a home game. 192 receiving yards on those 15 catches. Terry Glenn had a 214-yard day back in 99. Again, he had a 193-yard day back in 98. Both of those games were on the road. And then Welker's 192 comes in number three, and it beats the home field record of 182 that Stanley Morgan had against Miami back in 1981.
If you guys want to get a treat, you should go to the horse track and watch Wes Welker jockey.
Maybe you should just put your binoculars on Wes Welker, period, and watch what he does and watch how he gets over the ball. I saw many, many times during the course of the game on Sunday, Wes just hid in behind the Patriot receivers and the Jet linebackers and just went to the open spot where Brady knew he would be. Bam, 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 just like clockwork. He knew exactly
nice
where to
player.
Go. More than just a nice little player. He sliced and diced the Jets. They had no answer for him. In fact, very few teams have any sort of answer for Wes Welker. And this, my friends, is why I mentioned it last year, and I'm going to say it again right now. Yes, I all realize that, you know, the Patriots will go as far as Tom Brady will carry them, but this MVP on this team is Wes Welker. Brady has to have somebody to throw to. It's Welker right now. His third 100-yard game of the season. His 10th regular season 100-yard game of his career. The fourth time this season he's gone over 10-plus catches. The eighth time in his career he's done that. Man is piling up some serious numbers. Andrew from New Bedford is on the phone. Andrew, you're inside the playbook.
How you doing, John?
Great, Andrew. How's it going?
It's going. I love the show.
Thank you.
Just getting back to the things you were saying about Lawrence Maroney. He's an excellent back when he runs to the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that they put him up the middle so often?
I don't know. I mean, I just don't think that they're not blocking the way that they need to be blocking. I don't see tight ends, you know, pinning linebackers. I don't see it. I'll tell you what I'd love to see. I'd love to see, did you watch any of that Tennessee Titan game last night?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You know, on those option plays that Young was throwing to Chris Johnson?
Yep.
I'd love to see Vince Young throw a couple of pitches like that to Lawrence Maroney and see what he could do.
Yeah, he's excellent in the open field.
Now, we don't have that, you know, in Tom Brady. But, you know, we keep asking, you know, and we keep wondering whether or not the Patriots have some kind of a wildcat package, for lack of a better phrase here, whether or not they run it with someone like Jed Hoyer or Isaiah Standback or somebody else, or, you know, use it on a direct snap to a running back. Why couldn't we see something like that? Did we lose him? Oh, we lost him. All right. If you get a chance to call back, try to give us a call back, Andrew. And we'll keep it open for you. They don't spring him to the outside. When they try to, he gets strung out. I think part of the problem with that is that when they do get him outside, he doesn't know when to turn it up. I don't know that he knows exactly when to make his cut and move upfield and take advantage of the defense overplaying around in. All right, Andrew's back. Hey, Andrew.
I don't know what happened. That's one thing. You're absolutely right about the line. They're awesome for blocking a pass rush, and, you know, obviously Tom Brady's got some time back there. Maroney needs obviously a little bit of work up the middle, but I think he's excellent in the open field and you know, a nice counter run, I think he's good at. You know, it'll give him a reason to stutter step.
You know what? That's a great thought right there. How about the old-fashioned counter tray? I mean, come on. All that is basically going, you know, from one side, the left side, you know, in the offensive backfield to the right side of the offensive line and vice versa. You know, how about a little pulling run block for the guy, well, you know, and spring the tackle out in front of him and let him make hay in the open field, like you suggested, and I happen to agree with you. Once you can get him past, you know, that initial 3 or 4 yards of the line of scrimmage, Maroney can be devastating when he gets into the secondary.
And another thing I was thinking about is, do you know how many screen passes offhand that we sent out to Welker last game against the Jets?
Screens. I'm going to say maybe two or three. I don't think all that many, to be honest with you. Several of them were short routes, but, you know, screen passes would have to be something that would be parallel to the line of scrimmage.
I mean, he was doing great what he was doing, but some of those situations that I find us in, you know, maybe like the 4th and 2 the other week against the Colts.
Yeah.
Now, how, I mean, he's automatic with a screen pass. He always gets some kind of yardage, always.
I don't know why they didn't go to him, by the way. I don't know why.
It might not be 10, 15, 40 yards, but, I mean, 2 is all we need.
Well, you've noticed that in lieu of a running game, a lot of times the Patriots throw those 4-yard flat passes, you know, to Welker. So, I mean, and frankly, I think that will be a huge, huge part, has to be, Andrew, a huge part of the game plan against the Saints next Monday is they have to control clock. One of the things the Patriots have done well on offense is control the clock. They have the time of possession in their favor on average every game, and they're going to have to play to the clock to keep the ball out of Drew Brees' hands. How do they do that? Well, first of all, you're going to have to run the football, but second of all, you're going to have the short, dink-and-dunk controlled passing game. Now, the temptation next Monday, I think, will be there to go over the top because the Saints have been banged up in the secondary, especially at cornerback. And they've had to go to the scrap heap to pick up a couple of replacements. And so far, they've held together okay. I mean, they've been blowing people away because the offense is scoring 37 points a game.
Now, what is Isaiah Stanback's role in the offense right now? I mean,
well, he plays the third wideout. He kind of shares that duty with Edelman. And he technically is the emergency quarterback.
Now, you see, when I look at his size, his build, I don't know how fast he can do the, you know, the 40-yard dash, but I mean, can this guy get open down the field? Is he fast? Can he get open? I haven't seen him go deep to him at all.
Well, first of all, I would argue that I don't think that the job of the third receiver is to go deep, all right? I think he's the medium range guy. And, you know, I think you're going to take your chances probably a bit more with, you know, a guy like Moss going deep than you are with Stanback going medium. That being said, he just hadn't had that many opportunities. I mean, it's just the Patriots, you know, feel like I'm certain that they know where Moss is going to be and they know where Welker's going to be, end of story. I'll tell you what I'd like to see more than Stanback. I want to see the tight end thrown to more.
Yeah, Benjamin Watson's an
come on. Absolutely. Hey, how about Chris Baker? I realize that they're using Baker for a lot of blocking right now, and frankly, they've needed it because I was talking about how Nick Kazier, you know, has actually been terrible at right tackle, and so what they're doing is they're using Baker to line up a side of Kazier, and they're using him to chip off rushers, and that's worthless. A tackle's got to be able to hold his own. You know, unless it's an elite rusher, a guy like a Dwight Freeney, you know, you should be able to hold your own. And Kazier can't do it. So you gotta give a guy like Baker and a guy like Watson a chance to get in the open field. And frankly, I don't think we throw to the tight end at all on Sunday?
No.
No, not once, I don't think.
Nope.
Not once.
Now, which game was it? It might have been a preseason. Maybe the last preseason when Chris Baker was out there and he did a phenomenal job of catching the ball, making plays when we needed him.
It was the last game against the Giants.
Did he have one or two touchdowns?
Yeah, a couple of touchdowns, yeah.
I mean, and Benjamin Watson is another tight end that can go deep.
Well, Watson has shown that he's got some good hands. Better hands than we originally thought. He's actually had a decent year. He's got the ability to really be a fantastic seam buster, you know, when teams come back and, you know, they play, you know, the zone defenses, you know, he can go right up the middle on guys.
I think he is in the top three for the fastest tight ends in the league right now.
Probably.
But
he's an underutilized weapon. And so that's why I'm talking about, when I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, Andrew, I said another nitpick that I have is play calling. I don't think that they're taking advantage, full advantage, in play calling of the personnel that they have.
They're not as aggressive as they were in 07.
That's exactly.
Last year they couldn't be aggressive because, you know, well,
right.
They could, but they had
Well, but gaps. You know what? Even last year, though, Matt Cassel was able to eventually work up to speed. Now we're seeing Tom Brady every week, in some facet of the game, every week we see him get a little bit closer, a little bit closer. He hasn't taken any steps back since, you know, probably week three or four. So it's been a gradual, slow progression for Brady, which is good. Now let's see the play calling amped up to basically to coincide with that. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
We got to see some shots. Except the only shots he's been taking are throwing over the top to Randy Moss, and frankly, Darrelle Revis, he's good.
He's good, yeah.
He's very, very good.
He's a blanket out there. Now, one more before I let you go.
Sure.
When are we going to see Sammy Morris? I thought we were going to see him this game. And
yeah, I did too. I was surprised that he was. I was surprised that he was an inactive.
And Fred Taylor won't be until the end of December.
They haven't IR'd him, so I guess there's a shot he comes back. My guess would be that, you know, I mean, Morris practiced last week. So my guess is that, you know, as long as everything goes according to plan, he'll practice again this week. And believe you me, he's going to have an extra day because it's a Monday night game.
Yep.
I'd love to see Morris back in there because if you told me you had a healthy Morris and Lawrence Maroney as a 1-2 punch back there, all right, you know what? I'll take my chances with that. That's not a bad combo back there. It's not bad. You know, you got a guy like Morris who can pound it. You got a guy like Maroney who, you know, can, you know, hit the quick hitter or hopefully get around end. If these guys would ever learn to friggin' block, you know, and then I think we'd be in okay shape. I'm really concerned, though, about holding this football 35 minutes or more against the Saints. I think they're going to have to hold the ball 35 minutes to beat the Saints.
It's going to be a tough one. Hey, John, I appreciate you taking my call. It was a pleasure.
Hey, I'm glad you took the time. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. You too.
All right. There you go. It's that easy. 508-543-7482. That's our telephone number here in the playbook. And, of course, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. In 20 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us as we will take a look around the NFL, the Thanksgiving Day games. We'll preview some of the weekend's games, and we'll take a brief foray into Monday Night Football because that's what ESPN will have on the docket for us next Monday as well. All coming up inside the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So, basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
The Patriots.
Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
John Rook inside the playbook here for a Tuesday. It's an all-encompassing nitpick Tuesday here in American Airlines Patriots.com radio. By that I mean this is the only show we have this week as our staff, our crew, most of the personnel here at the stadium will be taken off about 2 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow for the Thanksgiving holiday, so there won't be any programming here thereafter. However, I will tell you that the Fantasy Lowdown will be recorded tomorrow, and it will air in this spot at 2 p.m. tomorrow. So those of you who tune in to chat with Brian Lowe and to talk a little fantasy football, he's going to record his show tomorrow morning. So if you have emails for B-Low, go ahead and send them in today. Send them in now. Send them in whenever you want, but he's going to be recording the show tomorrow morning, and it will air in this time slot at 2 p.m. tomorrow. It'll be recorded because, like I said, we're all going home for the holiday at 2 p.m. tomorrow.
I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
1:30 p.m. tomorrow, the PFW guys, they will be live here tomorrow from 12 to 2 Eastern. And at 1:30 tomorrow, they'll be making their NFL picks for the holiday weekend. And obviously got to pick tomorrow because there are three games on Thursday this week with the traditional Detroit Lions. They've got Green Bay on Thursday, then the traditional Cowboys. They've got Oakland on Thursday. A couple of yawners. You're not getting out of that tryptophan fix on Thursday because those games will put you right to sleep. Although the Giants and Broncos, I think, sounds like it could be somewhat promising. NFL Network has that one on Thursday night. Sorry, I won't be watching that one because I'll be in the middle of Longhorns and Aggies on Thursday night on ESPN. So probably be just as much of a yawner, I hope. Knock on wood. sorry about that, strippers. So there are three Thursday games, but like I said, the only one that really looks like it holds any promise is the Giants-Broncos. Although I guess, really, the way the Cowboys played this last week, I mean, 7-6. Over Washington, what a stinker. And, of course, the Raiders did everybody a favor, especially the Patriots, in somehow managing to beat Cincinnati. And so that thrust the Patriots right back into the thick. Right back into the thick of getting a bye in the opening round of the playoffs. They are right now technically in a three-way tie for second at 7-3. So it's going to have to be one of the three teams right now, it would appear, that are 7-3 that would be in position for a bye. I think San Diego is probably in the best shape, considering what they have left to play and what the Patriots have left to play, and, for that matter, what the Bengals have left to play. But those are the teams that are 7-3. Doesn't mean the Pats can't do it. They would certainly take a huge step in the right direction. As being a true contender for the number two seed in the AFC if they could knock off the Saints next Monday. They're still well in control of things in the AFC East, but if they don't win the game on Monday night, then that really puts a big burden on the following Sunday's game against Miami. Because Miami could conceivably what? They could conceivably be a game out. And so that would make the Patriots-Miami game technically for, you know, a share of the division lead. That's really what it kind of boils down to. Dolphins have the Bills. They play away at the Bills. But nevertheless, certainly a winnable game. And the Dolphins win it, they're 6-5. Patriots lose, they're 7-4. And so then the Dolphins have the Patriots right where they want them. You know, week after next, in Miami, with a win, tying for the division lead. So you can see that these next 2 weeks are exceedingly crucial for the Patriots, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But you can't get ahead of yourself. Can't get ahead of yourself. Todd writes in, should Welker be in the conversation for league MVP? I mentioned team MVP. Todd says team a league MVP, fifth in yards, 854. First in receptions with 79. First in yards per game with 106.8. With two games missed. I know he probably won't win it with the likes of Manning and Peterson and Chris Johnson in the running, but he should be talked about. Well, he'd be talked about, but no, he won't be in the running for league MVP. Frankly, I think, you know, right now, that's, you know, either Manning's or Drew Brees's to lose, whichever, you know, team ends up probably having the best overall record in the NFL. But I don't think you can say that there should be any discussion about Wes Welker being a Pro Bowl caliber player. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And if he's not elected to the Pro Bowl team, then somebody's not doing their homework. Whether it is, you know, a media member or other players around the league who aren't, you know, noticing. I mean, that's a joke to me. No doubt in my mind that, you know, Wes Welker is a Pro Bowl player. He is an all-pro caliber receiver. And arguably, he is the Patriots' most valuable player at this stage of the season, right now. He has been Tom Brady's binky and then some. Chris, why do the Thanksgiving games always have to be such turkeys? Tongue-in-cheek, right? Do we really need to see the Lions get blown out again? Well, here's the thing with that, Chris. It is, the NFL is big on tradition. You probably realize that. I mean, you know, they got this whole 50-year AFL legacy thing going on this year and the throwbacks that we've seen. And, you know, this is a real old-school league, even though we've got probably new-school attitudes from a lot of players and a lot of folks. And Detroit has traditionally played the Thanksgiving Day game. Dallas, in the 1970s, traditionally has played a Thanksgiving Day game. So the Dallas' tradition has been going on for 30-plus years, 35-plus years now. You know, the NFL decided to add a third league game to the Thanksgiving Day mix, what was it, just a couple of years ago. You know, when the NFL Network finally launched. And decided, you know, hey, this is a great chance for us to showcase ourselves and our new network by having an exclusive primetime game on that Thursday Thanksgiving night. So, you know, you've got two teams that have long-standing, decades-long traditions of playing Thanksgiving Day football in Detroit and Dallas. Obviously, Detroit has been, you know, a turkey for a number of years now, and there's really not a whole lot we can do about that. You kind of, I will tell you this, though. I don't know anybody, and I know a few guys who, you know, like to have a little fun with the games, and by that, I mean wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean? They'll do a little action on it. And frankly, they don't touch Thanksgiving Day games. Why? Because Detroit always usually seems to play very well, no matter how bad they stink. And so, whether or not you choose to have your Thanksgiving celebration early in the day or later in the day, you know, when you're watching the first game, which is usually, what, a noon Eastern time kickoff, it usually is entertaining, usually. Been a couple of stinkers in there, but, you know, this is traditional rivalry. This is Green Bay and Detroit. You know, this is the AFC Norris division. You know, so this is, you know, this is, I mean, NFC. My guess is, you know, Green Bay hasn't been overpowering. Green Bay will probably come in. I'm not sure that they would probably want to play this game. My guess is Detroit makes a game of this. Just a hunch. Just a hunch. I don't think Green Bay blows them away by any stretch. The way the Cowboys played this last week, all bets are off there, too, as far as Oakland's concerned, because Oakland came in and just beat Cincinnati. So we're liable to have two decent games. And, of course, the best game, at least on paper, going in, is probably that Thursday night game on NFL Network. So, you know, I mean, it may seem like at least at the outset here that they seem to be turkeys, but I'm not so sure that they'll turn out that way this year. Just some food for thought, so to speak. Thanks, Chris, for the email. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania. Even though I'm still on the fence about Lawrence, he did get at least one good run of maybe 8 yards in the third quarter where he lowered his shoulder and knocked the linebacker on his ass. I totally agree with your assessment of the offensive line blocking for Maroney. Something needs to change with either Lawrence or the offensive line when it comes to run blocking when he is on the field. One more thought. Where did the term goal, as in first and goal, come from? The only sports I know the term goal are in used are hockey and soccer. Well, technically, Mike, it's not first in goal. It's first and goal, which means it's first and goal line to go for the touchdown. Shortening that to goal, G-O-A-L. That's it. That's where the term came from. It's first and goal, not first in goal. Probably just a matter of, semantics, but that's basically what where the term came from. It's short for goal line because they only have the goal line to go before they score a touchdown. There's not a 10-yard difference there, or it's usually inside of 10 yards. Okay, lost my spot here. And now the computer has decided to freeze. Oh, there it goes. Okay, beautiful. Now we're back. Sorry about that.
Dave from Rhode Island, you hit the nail on the head when you say the Patriots are too predictable. I sent an email earlier in the season and said that they were boring, and I still think that the Patriots' defense is not a championship-caliber defense, and the offense, with all the weapons they have, seem to flare out as the game progresses. It is frustrating as a fan to see my team play the way it does. I do see improvement in some aspects of the game as far as the defensive backfield goes. Merriweather and Bodden are playing decent ball, but they also give up some big plays. Just look at the Indy game. Other than the defensive backs, I don't see much pressure being put on opposing quarterbacks, which is frustrating. I know Bantha Kane had a sack in the game Sunday, but I have not really been impressed with the rush defense. Neither have I, Dave. As for the running game, Maroney did have a decent game Sunday and has been playing better as of late, but I do agree with you on how the offensive line is just not that good with the run blocking. Kudos to Vollmer stepping in for Matt Light and playing the way he does. I've been pretty impressed with him, although I could block better than someone like Matt Light, laughs out loud. Well, if you got Matt Light's size, then you can probably say that. Other than Wes Welker, had an amazing game, the best slot receiver in the game. All in all, I want to see more consistency and for them to be more aggressive on D and stop being so damn lazy. That's right. I said it. Laugh out loud. Okay. Dave, I don't really have any problems with what you said there. I think I'm kind of sharing your same frustrations, and I think there are probably several fans sharing the same frustrations that you are with this team. I don't think they're aggressive enough on defense. They really have not had much of a pass rush at all, except for Tully Bantha Kane this year. They've done a pretty good job for the most part in stopping the run, although I thought that they were soft. I thought they were soft against the Jets. Thomas Jones made them soft, but I thought that they were soft. And offensively, I'd like to see them, pick it up a notch and get a little bit more creative and keep them aggressive calling plays. I don't see near as much aggressiveness with this team's play calling on both sides of the football as we did, say, 2 years ago, or even in some instances last year. That's really what I want to see. I want to see more aggressiveness in the play calling come to pass. And, yes, I do want to see this offensive line. You got to figure out a different way to run block because it ain't working. It ain't working for Maroney. And I think part of the – and I'm willing to cut Lawrence Maroney some slack. You guys know I've banged on him as much as any player I've banged on in the last 9 years that we've had this program. We started Playbook back in 2001. Before this stadium was even built. It was the second year of Web Radio. Web Radio started in 2000, I guess, or 1999, 2000. And we began this program in 2001. And I banged on that guy more than any other single player over the years. And I'm willing to cut him a little bit of slack here just because, I watched the offensive line block from a different angle, looking at the end zone cameras, which, of course, the coaching staff is privy to, okay? They have a bunch of cameras up in the end zone. You look at the scoreboard up at Gillette, okay, and you'll see the cameras up in the slot up there in the main scoreboard, by where the banners are hanging. And they also have cameras up on the other scoreboard down by the tower as well. So they get end zone views Trust me, they get end zone views. What do you think those pictures are that they, you know, review down on the sideline? You know, when the offense comes off the field, they're looking at schemes, they're looking at lineups, they're looking at formations, they're looking at how the defense lines up, they're looking at all kinds of things. And most of these pictures, and Tom Brady said as much here on Patriots Monday, most of those pictures are taken right after the snap of the football so they can see where the holes and where the blocking and who's on and who's not. A lot of the blocking for the Patriots is side to side. I don't see any pin your ears back, you know, white knuckle, you know, moving forward type of blocking. I just don't see it. Don't see it. A lot of it is contained blocking. I don't see explosive blocking. I don't see hitting the tackling dummy blocking. I don't see it. If I'm wrong, tell me, but I don't see it. James. Ryan doesn't fall far from the tree. I'm talking about Rex Ryan here. Buddy was the same way. It's their MO. I see this all of the time. All talk, not much doing. I'm always suspicious of talkers as I feel it makes up for fear and it tries to get you to come down to their level. Ryan won't last too long, 2 to 4 years probably. Enthusiasm will only carry you so far, and nobody can do it forever. Now, as far as the Jets game, Patriots have not convinced me that they have it to get very far into the postseason. Their MO has always been to run up the score in the first half, come close to losing it all in the second half, then win on gamble calls in the last couple of minutes. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Remember, in the long term, the house always wins. If the Patriots play to win in the first half, then they leave nothing but the choice to give up or go for it all in the second half for the opponent. Patriots need to play to win throughout the entire game, maybe even more aggressive in the second half instead of playing to not lose. Bill has always said 60 minutes. Well, maybe he should be saying that to his coaches, too. The Giants figured this out 2 Super Bowls ago. Now, a smart team knows that the second half is your chance to beat the Patriots because they will only play not to lose. That's James in Pittsburgh, by the way. And he says, P.S., as much as I don't like Ryan as a head coach, I'd love to have him as our defensive coordinator, at least his attitude on both offense and defense of our team. I'm not sure that'll ever happen, James, but hey, you know, stranger things I think have happened, perhaps. All right, let's pause here for a timeout. We still got time for your emails. webradio@patriots.com. Your nitpicks from the game on Sunday. Your thoughts not only on Thanksgiving football, but leading into the Patriots and Saints next Monday night. Hey, anybody want to offer up an early prediction on the game? webradio@patriots.com. You've got time to do that because after the other side here of this particular break, Russell Baxter joins us in the playbook.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
I was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America and a member PIC. Copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Back inside the playbook for a Tuesday, our only playbook of the week this week. Thursday will be a replay, by the way, in this time slot. In case those of you, you know, who are trying to get over your turkey comas or looking for something to listen to during the day on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day. Friday, we will be back live here on Patriots.com radio with Patriots Friday. So we will be back live on Friday with the full array of Patriots Friday. And don't forget that since the game is next Monday, Patriots Monday will be when? Kids, are we keeping up with this at home? It'll be next Tuesday. I can't make this stuff up. Hey, listen, this is just the way it works. So Patriots Monday will be Tuesday. Patriots Friday will be here. Patriots Thursday will be replayed. What else do we need to know?
You're making my point.
Yeah, I know. We will be back here with normal programming next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow.
Can't do Patriots Monday on a Monday if there's no players.
That's true. And obviously there's a game to be played that night anyway. So there won't be any programming on Monday, and then we'll have Patriots Monday on Tuesday.
Well, they'll still hear all the replays from the end of the week.
If you need to, you know, log on, if just, you know, your habit of logging on is just to the point where you must click onto something, then, yeah, you'll hear basically a replay of all the Patriots Friday and from the tail end of the week stuff next Monday here in this particular time slot, because that's what we normally do. We always have something on the air. When we say we have something on the air, it just may not be live programming. Based on schedules and everything else that comes up. Russell has said that he needed about 5 minutes. He's just getting out of a meeting, so he'll join us here shortly inside the playbook. But so anyway, that's the update on the schedule for the remainder of the week. PFW guys will be here again from 12 to 2 tomorrow. They'll do their NFL picks, including the Thursday picks, at 1:30 Eastern time tomorrow. And then 2 p.m. tomorrow will be the taped version of Fantasy Lowdown. So, again, if you have emails for Brian Lowe and the Fantasy Lowdown, make sure you send those in today, tonight, early tomorrow, because he'll be taping that program tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, for those of you that might be listening to this on a podcast. All right? So that's the update from the holiday schedule. And then, of course, because we have Monday Night Football, it's a shorter than usual schedule for next week as well. And you know what? We'll have to pretty much jump right into it next week. I'm sure there will be a lot to talk about from the Monday Night game with the Saints, but we'll have to jump right into it because depending upon what happens over the weekend, the following week's game at Miami could be for the division lead. It could be for everything. Could be for the Marbles. First week of December, bang! You're playing for the division lead. And you have a chance to say goodbye to everybody else in the AFC East if you can somehow win these next two. So, I mean, the Patriots season is kind of hanging in the balance. They lose these next two, then they'll probably find themselves tied with Miami at 7-5 2 weeks from now. So that's what you're looking at. That's kind of what you're looking at. Crucial time. Brian sends this email. Guys, I noticed that Julian Edelman handled all the kick return duties versus the Jets. Do you think he'll continue to get the opportunity to handle all the kick returns? On one hand, Julian fits the mold of the more established return guys for the Patriots of recent, Welker, Troy Brown, etc. Small, quick, smart, safe. On the other hand, those guys usually just handle punts. So I'm wondering if Edelman is just back on kicks on account of all the injuries at receiver and the inability to put Maroney back there given the depth at running back, or if the Patriots finally have a return guy they will establish and stick with. Love the show. Happy Thanksgiving. Go Pats. All right, Brian. Good question. My guess is that this is a guy that they really would like to stick with the job. I think you're right. I think they feel like, you know, he did return a kick for a touchdown in the preseason. So I think they feel like they've got somebody who's capable of, you know, not only following his blocking, but finding the holes. He's got enough speed where he can manufacture yards for himself. He's not lightning fast, but he's quick, kind of like Welker. And so in that regard, I think they like his ability to make something out of nothing. And because obviously he had the broken arm earlier in the year, that kind of set his progress back, and they were just sort of catch-as-catch-can back there. But I think that, you know, my guess is that Edelman is back on kicks because they originally intended for him to be back on kicks. I still think they like Welker returning punts and using Falk to back him up. That's my guess. But Edelman, I think, is going to be your primary kick returner for at least the foreseeable future. I'm thinking also that, you know, well, obviously they've lost, you know, a couple of players, you know, to the IR this year that also had figured in there. And I really thought that before Matthew Slater had, one of those was Matthew Slater, who I think was going to figure in back there. But even though he's still playing now, I think they kind of feel like his role has changed somewhat, which tells me that he might not be completely 100%. So anyway, that's my thought on Edelman. I do believe that he's going to continue to get that opportunity to return those kicks. Jim in Florida chimes in with his two cents today. Hi, Jim. First, John, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Thank you, Jim. Same to you. John, let's not give Rex Ryan and the Jets the dignity of even bothering to address his latest whine. As you said, if Ryan is going to send seven after Brady in that third down, he's got nothing to complain about if Brady tries to make the Jets pay for it. My nitpick this week is the Patriots' second-half offense. The team has lost three games in 2009. All three games, the team had a halftime lead. And in two of those losses, the team went scoreless in the second half. And against the Colts, the Patriots' offense missed opportunities to score critical points that ultimately cost the team a victory. My suggestion is the Pats' offense trying to be more aggressive on second down rather than leaving it up to third and two or three and six. Same thing in the red zone. Go for the score on first and second down rather than playing conservative and leaving the drive up to whether or not they can convert on third down in the red zone, settling for three rather than seven too often. That strategy didn't get it done at the Meadowlands in Denver or in Indy, and it won't get it done in New Orleans. You know, I think that's a great point, Jim. I think that's a great point. I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of the conservative nature of the play calling. They're waiting on third down to take their chances. I do think that maybe they could solve some of the problems if they were more aggressive earlier in the series. Second down. Why not take some stabs on first down? I don't think we see a lot of that. I think we see more of it on first down than we do on second down. I'd like to see some mixing and matching. I truly would. I think that's actually a pretty good observation right there. He says, by the way, I'll be at that game in New Orleans, so I won't jinx the Pats by predicting a winner and score, except to say it'll be a high-scoring affair. All right, Jim. Going to the game in New Orleans. Outstanding. I think that'll be a raucous time. You know, the people of New Orleans will certainly have every reason to be partying hard on that one. They've got every reason to be sky high for that one. It's got to be one of the biggest, if not the biggest regular season game in the history of that franchise, perhaps short of their comeback game coming back from the devastation of Hurricane Katrina. That had to be the biggest game in franchise history. But this one has to rank pretty close, right up there. Just because of its significance, because it's a chance for them to showcase themselves, for everybody to see how far they've come, to showcase this football team, to prove that 10-0 is not a fluke, to win a game, albeit at home, though, against one of the perceived elite teams in the NFL, yada, 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 on and on and on. So that is, it's going to be a big night in New Orleans for the Saints. And as I've already suggested here, it will be, I think, at least as big a night for the Patriots, considering what they have on the immediate horizon schedule-wise. If they don't beat the Saints on Monday and Miami wins at Buffalo on Sunday, it's a one-game lead, and the Patriots are going to Miami with the division lead hanging in the balance in 2 weeks. That's huge. Bob from East Boston. Plain and simple, my nitpick is the 3 delay of game penalties on the Pats. There's no excuse for this, especially since the Pats are at home with the crowd not making an excessive amount of noise. Happy Thanksgiving to one and all. Bob, you know what? That's a good one. I had actually written that note down here, and I hadn't gotten to it, and I'm glad you brought it up. What is with the delay of game penalties? I mean, come on. Tom briefly addressed this, I think. I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was after the game on Sunday or if it was yesterday. They purposely, he said this now, they purposely work the play count late. Why they do it, I'm not entirely certain. I guess that has something to do with the fact that they do lead the league, or they're, you know, amongst the leaders in time of possession, which they're going to have, I think. As I said earlier, I think they're going to have the ball 35 minutes to beat the Saints. But they wait too doggone late to signal the play. And I don't know if that's just inexperience from someone like Bill O'Brien, or getting it relayed in, or Belichick not pulling the trigger, or Belichick maybe overruling a play call. I'm not sure what it is, but somehow, some way, this is all sort of adding to the problem. And I think some of that has to do with the fact that's why the Patriots are having trouble getting plays off, even at home. What happened to the good old days when the quarterbacks called their own plays? What happened to those days? Why do quarterbacks not have more of that, especially when you see quarterbacks wear those heavy wristbands that have all these play calls and combinations of plays and formations and sets and all that stuff? And all they have to do is look at the wristband and say, you know, X, Y, out, Z, zero, slot.
335 max base, yeah. Throwback chip flare.
Thank you.
Zero out, slot, right, 335 max base, throwback chip flare.
Okay. You, and then that just came off the top of his head. So why don't the quarterbacks just call the play rather than let the stinking play clock go down? Bob, you and I will forever be wondering about that, I think. Well, that's a very good nitpick out of you, a very good one. Russell Baxter.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter.
In with us on a Tuesday here in the Playbook. A happy early Thanksgiving to you and your family, Russell.
And 69 toss power trap to you as well.
So. Right, 69 toss power trap. That was the play called by Hank Stram on NFL Films that he made famous, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 69
Absolutely.
Toss power trap.
And, when, well, you know, back in an era where more quarterbacks actually called their own plays.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you, just, you know, what are your thoughts on that? I'd like for you to offer up an opinion. Why do not more quarterbacks take the bull by the horns, especially with the clock rolling down, and not call their own plays?
I think because the game is so micromanaged now, you know, coordinators, quarterbacks, coaches, you know, you have coordinators who aren't necessarily the play caller or the head coach might be. Et cetera, you know, the headset in the helmet. I think all those things factor in now and so on. Sometimes, you know, gut instinct is kind of taken out of the equation. You know, you back in the day when Terry Bradshaw called his own plays and, you know, Jim Kelly at certain spots during with his no-huddle regime did his own play calling and mm-hmm. so on. Whatever, you know, it's like anything else in the business world sometimes. Sometimes there's just too many chefs.
Interesting. Yeah, that's what I think. The game has kind of gotten difficult to follow. It's gotten not only micromanaged, but probably too technical in a lot of ways. And so,
yeah, gone are the days, John, as I'm going to cut over at the trash can, throw me the ball.
You know? Sometimes, though, we get our more spectacular plays called off the cuff like that.
I'm going to run by the telephone pole, but I'm going to cut out the trash can.
Exactly.
Throw me the ball.
I wish we could do that more and more often. We've got the Colts and the Saints both at 10-0 now. Third time in NFL history that the league has had two 10-0 teams. It happened twice before in 1934 and in 1990. So I ask you, of the two teams, in your estimation, which is the most likely to extend that streak out and challenge the Patriots 16-0?
Well, you know, the Patriots obviously have an opportunity to take care of business on one of them this weekend,
yep.
Or I should say Monday night.
Yep.
you know, neither one of these teams is overpowering defensively, which we to me means that either one of them, I'm not sure either one's going to make it because of that. Although the one thing both of them have done very well, and the Saints are much improved in it, is taking the football away. You know, I don't think people realize the Colts, of course, who have won their last four games by a total of 10 points.
Right.
They've also forced two or more turnovers in eight straight games. So, and of course, New Orleans has already exceeded its takeaway total from last year, and their defense alone has scored seven touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
But neither one of these teams is, I would say, staunch against the run, which I think leaves them vulnerable to just about any team they play. So to me, it's, again, I actually wouldn't be overly surprised if they both bit the dust this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Both of them?
Yeah, both of them. Why not? Listen, Indy's been, I don't want to say borrowed time, but, you know, they have been playing a very, very fine line. They're playing a very desperate Houston team this week, which has already, of course, lost two heartbreakers to the Colts.
Right.
And to the Titans, almost identical same ways, identical scores. And, of course, Monday night, which I know we'll talk about a little later,
yeah.
The Saints, have a very, very stiff task.
Well, I was looking at the schedule. Obviously, the other aspect of all of this is that the Colts have now won 19 straight regular season games, which is second all-time behind the Patriots' 21-game streak. And so, obviously, now there are a lot of fans here that will begin looking at what the Colts have left to see if they can tie, if not beat, the Patriots' record of 21 straight. You mentioned Houston, obviously, which is coming up. Let's see, where are we here? Here's the schedule. All right, let's figure that out. You got Houston coming up,
then
you got Tennessee. So that would tie the record, and then Sunday, December 13th is Denver. But Tennessee and Denver are both at home.
Right, and Houston's on the road, but Houston can run the ball. We know Tennessee can really run the ball. And Denver's kind of in free fall right now and so on. So, I think the next 2 weeks, the two division opponents that know them the best, well, I think will provide the biggest obstacle for the Colts. I don't think there's any question about it. I think after that they have, like you said, they have the Broncos. I know there's a game with the Jets coming up. They finish the season at Buffalo, and I'm forgetting someone, Jacksonville, who can also run the football.
Yep.
I think if the Colts are going to lose, it's going to be to one of the division foes.
Okay.
Because any one of those balls, I think, can ram the ball down their throat.
Okay. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about from this last week before we look at, this week's games, you know, it has to do with the fact that somehow, inexplicably, I suppose, Cincinnati lost to Oakland, which opens the door back up again for the Patriots, amongst others, to contend for a potential opening round bye at 7-3. And
there's no question about it. It was kind of an inexplicable week in that entire division.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know,
no
Pittsburgh
kidding.
Losing at
Kansas City. And, I mean, this real head scratchers, Russell.
Yeah, but it shows you the fine line in this league. You know, Pittsburgh made a habit of winning those close games last year against really, really good teams, and this year they've you know they lost to the Bears early in the season by a field goal. And, you know, Pittsburgh is all four of their losses this year by 6 points or less, three of them by a field goal. So there's that fine line of being able to pull out those games, which is what they did last year. But Cincinnati may be a little let down after beating Pittsburgh on the road and so on. And, you know, listen, this Oakland team, as disorganized as they are, did beat the Eagles earlier this season out in Oakland. So even even a blind squirrel finds the end zone every once in a while.
Okay.
Everybody kind of got brought back to the pack a little. And every once in a while, you just happen to have weekends like that. And, you know, yeah, the Patriots, for them, need to pounce on this opportunity. Now, you know, right off the top of my head, I know Cincinnati's got some formidable teams still left to play. Of course, so does the Patriots and so on. But what this also does is also brings San Diego into the realm of the two seeds
sure.
as well. So you now have 3-7-3 teams. All vying for the two spot, and you know sometimes yes, sometimes no. The difference between one and two, is obviously the bye in that extra game. But as you well know, 3 years ago, 1-2 in the AFC were San Diego and Baltimore, and it was 3-4 New England and Indy that played in the AFC title game.
That's also true.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean everything, but certainly if you can
getting
get it,
in is the most important thing.
Sure.
You well know, and
yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think when you have teams like, especially I would say the Patriots, the Colts, and the Steelers, for them getting in is kind of the equivalent of North Carolina, Duke, and the old Georgetown team's getting in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, actually. Yeah, there's a lot of people that hang their hats on that. Three Thursday games, you know, again, the Lions involved, the Cowboys involved. I had an emailer earlier wonder how come the NFL always has to play lousy games on Thanksgiving. And I beg to differ. Usually the Lions, no matter how bad their record is, they usually manage to play fairly competitive on Thanksgiving Day, with, you know, the last couple of years excluded. The Cowboys, you know, frankly, they've long played some entertaining football on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, who can forget, you know, Clint the Mad Bomber Longley, and how about Leon Lett and the snow and the fumbling against Miami a few years ago? All that was Thanksgiving Day stuff, which is great. And then, of course, the NFL added an extra piece to the mix a couple of years ago with the advent of the NFL Network, and now we've got a Thursday night game, and this year it happens to be the Giants at the Broncos, which is really not all that terrible either. So I don't know that necessarily it's such a bad slate of games for Thursday.
Listen, I mean, I mean, if we could forecast 8 months in advance which were going to be the good games, we would put them all on Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, and Thanksgiving.
Now, you guys would be greedy, and you'd take them all.
To me, it's almost like this convenient nitpicking argument about the Lions on Thanksgiving. Okay,
it's tradition.
Here's the other thing: if the, you know, who, without question, going into last weekend, what was the quote-unquote dog game on the schedule?
Last weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Detroit and Cleveland, but it turned out to be one of the best games of the day, though.
At 30, yes, exactly. So, you know, listen, if everybody knew how good things were going to be, nobody would be working. Okay, we would have put our, you know, like the Back to the Future sequel. We would have had the book and all the results and put our money down on things. We'd all be living high on the hog and stuff. It doesn't work out that way. But I like the fact that the Lions get to be, because they have been bad. They've lost five straight on Thanksgiving by really bad totals. Remember, 47-10 last year to Tennessee. But I like the fact that they play. It's their spotlight.
Yeah.
And in fact, they deserve it even more than the Cowboys do, to be honest with you. They've been doing this since 1934.
Yeah.
The Cowboys have been doing it steadily since 1978. There were a couple times in the mid-70s
when they played, the
old St. Louis Cardinals hosted the game.
That's right, yeah.
Very famous game in 77 where Bob Greasy and his glasses threw six touchdown passes, and Conrad Dobler made a very quick exit at Busch Stadium that day.
Right.
But there was a tradition. I like the fact that the NFL Network has added a third game, and, listen, a nice little triple header. In fact, if you think about it, that triple header on Thanksgiving Day kind of replaces the old Saturday afternoon and night triple headers that we usually have late in the season now.
Yeah, yeah, so that's
really
a good point.
You know, the NFL Network primetime schedule is really based on Thursday night games. There's only one Saturday night game every year now, which, although it's a doozy this year, it's the Cowboys and the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look forward to. So.
Yeah, sure. You know, of the three games then, which do you think is the best spot for an upset? Now, I know the Cowboys basically slept walk and played a horrible game and managed to squeeze by Washington, and the Raiders managed to knock off Cincinnati, but can the Raiders win at Dallas?
I think if they play with the kind of same defensive intensity as they did last week it's amazing. You don't want to pile on Jamarcus Russell and so on, but, you know, here are the facts of the facts. First nine games of the year, he threw two touchdown passes and nine interceptions. Last week against the Bengals, Bruce Kutkowski threw two touchdown passes and one interception. They won the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, two is two. And, you know, the Raiders, who don't play great run defense, but, you know, still bring a little bit of heat on the pass rush. It's not the Steelers or amazingly steady or anything like that, but they still have a little physicality to them. They still have the really good cover corner in Asamoah, and they do a real, real good job in certain aspects of the game. The big flaw with them, unfortunately, has been the quarterback position, and Jamarcus Russell has been a serious detriment at times, and it'll be interesting to see just how long Gronkowski stays in there and they keep Jamarcus Russell on the bench.
And as far as the Giants and the Broncos are concerned, what are your thoughts on the Broncos and the tailspin they've been in? Are teams, you think, just kind of catching up to what Kyle Orton can offer?
Well, I think it's more less about Kyle Orton and more about, a couple weeks ago they had the opportunity to throw the ball downfield against Washington. They did it, and then he got hurt, and they couldn't sustain anything. Chris Sims, very woefully inexperienced. after not playing for the last, basically the last 3 years. But defensively, they were more quick team, a 3-4 defense with quick. And the quick is, means light, and the light is starting to get a little worn down. And last week, you know, the Chargers who have not run well all year got over 200 yards rushing on them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Josh McDaniels is knows the limitations of this team and squeezed a lot out of it early. Now, that being said, the Giants' defense has not played well because of injuries, and they got people back last week and still didn't play all that well. They blew a 2-touchdown lead before winning in overtime. So I think anything could go in that Sunday night game in Denver, to be honest with you.
Sure. The Sunday games, the one that I think that people probably didn't realize that they should pay attention to, happens to be the other divisional game with the Dolphins playing at the Bills. And should the Patriots – well, obviously this game will be over with before the Patriots ever take the field in, against New Orleans on Monday. But if the Dolphins win that game and the Patriots lose on Monday, then the following Sunday is for the division lead.
Yes, it is, and you know, the Miami Dolphins were able to pick up two quick games in 5 days by beating the Bucs, you know, after blowing a lead and having to come from behind, and of course, you know, staving off Carolina at the end as well. And you know, when you know, it's funny when you watch Miami play, and you know, so much is made of the Wildcat this, Wildcat that. Whatever they do, they really, really execute well. Regardless, that's the one thing I'll say about Miami. Watching them play, they are a team that really specializes in execution. Done a great job. And last week, of course, the kingpin of their Wildcat attack is Ronnie Brown, and now he's now out for the year. And lo and behold, Ricky Williams, still pretty quick, still pretty powerful. And as we well know, John, well-rested for
sure.
Some stints in his career.
Sure.
And, you know, you could do a whole book on just his travels around. But still, he seems like he's found new life down there with Bill Parcells and Tony Sparano. And you know, he's become kind of a feel-good story. I know for the people that, you know, were caught up in that whole situation about him being suspended and, you know, quitting the team and all that stuff, I'm sure it brings back bad memories. But for the most part, he's done quite the 180. So.
Yes, he has. The other games on Sunday, frankly, there's not a whole lot to jump out. We talked briefly about the Colts playing at the Texans, a Houston team that will be desperate to get a win so they can stay in the playoff hunt. Frankly, I'm a little torn about this. Number one, I wouldn't mind seeing the Texans win at home. But number two, I'm not so sure that I want the Texans with the thought that they can actually reach the playoffs needing a win against New England the last week of the season.
Well, listen, last night was a game, and I know Gary Kubiak's taking a lot of heat about you know, not being a little more aggressive and getting the field goal kicker. And it's hard to, you know, hard to listen, though. It comes with the territory. Hard to say a 49-yard field goal is a 49-yard field goal. That's a long field goal. Although, I will say this, Chris Brown looked like he missed it pretty quick,
mm-hmm.
The way it squirted off to the left. And, of course, I think he's getting even more heat about it because, of course, 2 weeks ago, the last time they played before last night, of course, he missed the field goal at the end at Indianapolis, and they lost 20-17. So, listen, they've done just enough to lose these last two games and, of course, their division games as well. And if you're going to take that next step and get out of that 8-8 rut, which they've been in for the last 2 years, got to win some of these games. Now, I also say this, played the Colts 15 times, and they lost to them 14 times. So,
yeah,
you know, and then, of course, last year they had the Colts by the you-know-whats before Sage Rosenfels turned into Baryshnikov and let the ball fly a couple of times. And then before you know it, Reggie Wayne makes one of those once-in-a-lifetime catches, and the Colts pull out another one. So, but, you know, you got to give Indy credit. And think about this, John. They are 10-0 for the second time in 5 years.
Which is amazing.
And, you know, a lot of people thought when Tony Dungy stepped down that streak of theirs of winning 12 or more games 6 years in a row was certainly going to come to an end. Well, they can lose four of their last six games now and still go 12-4.
Sure.
There's a lot to be said for that.
Sure. That means that the cupboard was definitely not bare. The 2-7-3 teams, along with the Patriots, so the Chargers are at home against the Chiefs. Chiefs, obviously, an upset winner against Pittsburgh. And then the other 7-3 team happens to be the Bengals, and they're home against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, and you would think Cincinnati gets back on the beam. I know Cleveland scored a lot of points last week, but you know, but Detroit will make any offense feel very, very good about itself, to be honest with you. As far as Kansas City, who didn't put up much of a fight when they played San Diego earlier this year, San Diego it seemingly got on their roll a little earlier than the last couple of seasons. Phillip Rivers, and I will say this, LaDainian Tomlinson, who for the last year and a half looked like he was nursing something, certainly has a seems like a little more spark and a little more burst back in his step.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think he'll present a major problem for you. Listen, Kansas City's defense last week gave up 515 yards. Despite Pittsburgh turning over the ball three times, I feel like they're not going to put up much of a fight against San Diego's offense.
Yeah, I don't think so either. The other game that I'm looking at that certainly would have playoff ramifications, and certainly even involving the Patriots perhaps on down the line, Steelers playing at the Ravens. Didn't think that that might turn into a survival battle, but frankly, that may turn out to be what it is.
Well, I mean, you got a 5-5 and a 6-4, and last year the Steelers only lost four games, and last year the Ravens only lost five games.
Right.
You know, I'll just throw this out. I'm going to tip off the board here for a second, but you understand what I'm saying. Who would have thought? As we know, Pittsburgh and Baltimore played in the AFC title game last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Philadelphia and Arizona played in the NFC title game. You know, we've heard of all that about this Super Bowl jinx, the team that loses the Super Bowl never makes it back to the playoffs. But who would have thought after 10 games, the one team from the Final Four who would have the best record would actually be Arizona?
Yeah, no kidding.
At 7-3.
That's right.
That being said, Ben Roethlisberger is expected to play. Pittsburgh's lost a little something. And I'll tell you one thing. They talk about their quarterback on offense. They don't have their quarterback on defense. And that leaves them not totally, because they are their number one ranked defense in the league, number one against the run. But at times they gave up these plays over the middle, and I think a lot of it has to do with the absence of Polamalu, who's not there to make the play.
Mm-hmm.
When he's there, they're a totally different defense. And I will also say this, regardless of their punts, interceptions, kickoffs, or whatever, you go eight games in a row giving up some sort of return, it automatically puts your defensive team and the rest of your team on their heels. And that's what the Steelers have done. Two interception returns, four kickoffs, a fumbled punt, and a fumble in general. Eight return touchdowns this team has given up in eight games.
Ooh.
And the Ravens have a habit of making plays like that. And maybe for that reason alone, I'm kind of leaning toward the Baltimore Ravens to extend the Steelers' losing streak.
Wow. And, then, of course, that gets us to the ESPN Monday night game. Your big one coming up on Monday. And certainly, as I mentioned earlier to our fans here, that it's got to be one of the biggest regular season games in Saints history on the other side of, you know, the return game from Hurricane Katrina. But the Saints are 10-0. They're bringing in a big-time opponent. They have a chance to stamp themselves legitimate against the Patriots on Monday night.
I don't think there's any question about it. And listen, the Superdome has been both bad and good to the Patriots, but good in the sense that it's where they began their dynastic run, in Super Bowl
36. That's 36. Very true. That's very true.
Yeah,
the scene of the crime, according to a lot of people around the NFL.
Yeah. Well, you know, it beat the earlier scenes of the crimes when they're losing 46-10 and 35-21 in Super Bowls. And
right,
so on.
Right,
so
true.
More pleasant times for the Patriots as we know them now.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, to me, you know, in the discussion the other day, we were discussing images of the decade. To me, my favorite image of the decade is that team coming out of the tunnel all by them lonesome.
Yeah.
Without introductions other than being one introduced as a team.
Right, in 2001, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So a lot of balance by both of these teams. I don't think the Saints running game gets enough publicity. The Patriots getting more balanced, I'll say that. But they're a team that's more geared to playing in games like this. Can the Saints beat them? I don't think there's any question about it. They get a lot of heat on Tom Brady and create some turnovers, yes. It's hard to believe this game is going to be anything but in the 30s.
Yeah.
And in that kind of – let's put it this way. I think the more seasoned team comes away with this. And when you have Brady and you have Moss and you have injuries in the Saints – secondary, who just brought back Mike McKenzie, as a matter of fact, at the corners. One time, I believe Randy Moss and Darren Sharper were teammates.
Yes, they were.
I think they're going to see a lot of each other deep. And I think this favorite, and by the way, the Patriots, and one of the more amazing streaks, you know, and again, this is regular season, not counting the Super Bowl loss to the Giants. Patriots have beaten NFC teams 17 times in a row in the regular season.
That is true.
And, you know, that's people say, oh, teams change and all that stuff. What it shows you, though, is their preparation, because it's teams you play once every 4 years. And on that, I kind of am leaning toward New England, too. But I'm kind of leaning toward both the undefeateds, too. You know, the last time we had two 10-0s was 1990, John.
Yes, correct.
They were supposed to play each other in 2 weeks. So The Rams had to, the Niners had the Rams at San Francisco. The Rams weren't very good that year. The Giants had to go to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. 1 week away from an unprecedented 11-0 versus 11-0, and both of them lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do a little history repeats itself. I think both teams might lose, and then the AFC really becomes a quagmire.
Wow. Well, I think from your mouth to Patriots fans and God's ears for a lot of Pats fans, they'd like to see that on Monday. But frankly, I think the Patriots will be hard-pressed to kind of stay up in a racehorse game. I made the mention earlier that I think the Patriots probably have to come up with about somewhere in the vicinity of about 35 minutes in time of possession to have a legitimate shot to win this game.
Well, I don't think that's out of the question for either one of these teams, because I think both teams have defensive suspect on defense.
Yeah.
And both teams, you know, New Orleans even more so than the Patriots, can run the football. And the Saints have a nice stable of backs, as do the Patriots and so on. But the Saints have run the ball pretty reliably all year.
Yes, they have.
People, I think, are under the misnomer that it's a Drew Brees-driven team.
Not entirely.
And it's not. This team is much more aggressive on defense. And to me, this is a playoff-type game. I don't want to say it's a Super Bowl preview, but it's a playoff-type game. And at least for this week, until proven otherwise, I'm still kind of leaning with the seasoned team in this instance.
Okay, fair enough. What are your plans for Thursday? Do you have to be stuck in the network, or do you get the day off for the family?
No. I will be visiting relatives, my wife's relatives in New York. And
nice.
As I explained to my coworkers, the only BlackBerry on Thursday will be pie.
Good for you. I'm glad you actually get the day, and you can actually watch football.
Yes, that's why I'm actually slaving away today to get it's my job. I try
of
to
course.
Explain to people.
Of course.
This is my job. You know, I know you want me to help with the dishes, but this is my job.
Precisely. Well, I know that all of our fans are very grateful for your spending the time with us, and since you're trying to cram all this in this week. So happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and I look forward to visiting with you again next week.
You got it, Sean. Take care of yourself.
All right, Russell. Will do. Same to you. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator, with us here in the playbook as he is every week. We'll take a timeout here. We've got more emails to get to. I think we're going to try to get to a conference call or two as well right here inside the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got razor-sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
So, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football shape serving trays.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
All right, we're on the homeward stretch here inside the playbook for this week, certainly on Tuesday's show, but obviously this is the only program we got this week with the holiday coming up, as we mentioned earlier. If you just kind of logged on, we won't be here tomorrow. We'll have a taped version of the Fantasy Lowdown, so if you've got some questions for Brian Lowe, make sure you email those in today or early in the morning because he'll be taping tomorrow, and then his program will be in this time slot from 2 to 4 Eastern time tomorrow as we all bug out of here for the Thanksgiving holiday at 2 p.m. tomorrow. PFW in Progress will be here from noon to 2 tomorrow. The guys will be doing their NFL picks at 1:30 on Wednesday. Thursday off. Patriots Friday will return at the normal time on Friday here on Patriots.com and Patriots.com Radio. And then, of course, with the Monday night football game, Patriots Monday won't be until next Tuesday, which then means, of course, we'll be back in the playbook next Wednesday. I think we got it all down.
As Bill Belichick would say, with every long week, there's a short week, and every short week, a long week.
A long week, indeed. And I think with every short week, it's a long week, and then, of course, next week it'll be the shorter week again, and everything will balance out. This is just the 12th time that the Patriots are getting ready to face the New Orleans Saints all time. First time in 4 years in the regular season. Last time these two teams met in the regular season was in 2005. Patriots won in New Orleans 24-17. Actually, I should say, no, it wasn't in New Orleans. It was here in 2005, and it was the first regular season visit to Gillette Stadium for the Saints. The Patriots won it by a touchdown. And remember, that game ended up being a lot closer than a lot of people thought it would be. But the Saints played the Patriots very well that day. The Patriots have won the last three games in the series with the Saints. They won the last time they were in the Superdome, which was in 1998. It was a 30-27 win, and that is playing the Saints, that is. And as Russell Baxter suggested, the Superdome has been a sort of a love-hate type of venue for the Patriots over the years with some of the big games that have been played in that venue won and lost in that venue for the Patriots. But just
spirituality, faith, and democracy are the cornerstones of our country. We are all Patriots.
Yes, we are.
And tonight, the Patriots are world champions.
Yep. 2001, who can forget that? Obviously, that was at the Louisiana Superdome. But just the 12th meeting all time, Patriots lead the series 8-3 for New Orleans. So to recap the win over the Jets and to start jumping in on Saints Week preparation, defensive coordinator Dean Pease of the Patriots with members of the media from earlier today here at Gillette.
Hey, Dean. This is Adam Kilmore with the Globe here.
Hi, Adam.
Hi. Have you watched Tully Bandicane for about 10 games for this year? How's he changed maybe or developed as a player in that time with San Fran, between the first years of his career and now?
Well, I think, early on he was playing behind guys like Willie McGinnis and Roosevelt Coleman and Mike Vrabel, and was used primarily in special teams. So I think, all during those years, I think he learned a lot from those guys and has just kept working hard and then left us for a little while and then came back. It was fairly familiar with, how we do things and what we're probably going to expect of him on defense. I think he's handled it well. He works hard at it. All those things that, all of us, including him, can improve on. But, I think he's come back and he's been in good shape and worked real hard at it. And, I think he's developed not only as an outside linebacker, but, as a pass rusher. So I think he's worked very hard at it.
Hi, this is Michael Vega. I'm sorry, I thought I muted this phone. just wanted to ask, when you size up the New Orleans Saints, what are those concerns that just jump out at you right off the bat in terms of preparing for them?
Well, the number one thing I think you look at is the fact that they have just about as many runs as they do passes. They are just a very, very balanced football.
baseball team. You know, I don't know what exactly the numbers are, but I know they're averaging like 150 yards rushing and whatever it is, passing. I mean, it's a very prolific offense, and they have so many weapons. The guys catch the ball, got good tight ends, got, you know, a number of backs besides Bush. I mean, all these guys run the ball. In fact, the other two actually run it even more than he has. So it's just a very, very balanced offense. I think somebody brought up to me the other day, it's almost within five or six plays of being the same number of runs as passes. So it's, that's always tough to prepare for when you have such a balanced attack.
In terms of the size of some of their receivers, I mean, guys like Colston, I mean, some of these, Newcomb too, I mean, these extremely large guys that they could go, they're almost like tight ends in a sense. Do you see it that way?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's no different than like at Denver, and there's some other teams that always have these big receivers. But the thing about them is not only their size, is they all have a great ability to catch the ball. I think, you know, sometimes everybody looks at, well, they're, a big guy matched up on a corner or whoever they might be matched up on. It's the fact that they've all gone up and caught the ball, whether it be in a crowd, good coverage, across the middle, whatever. I think the biggest thing about them is they're all willing to go wherever they need to catch the ball and willing to go up and get it. And that certainly presents a challenge for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Hey, Dean, it's Shalief. I know that last week against the Jets, getting pressure on Sanchez was effective because it forced him to make decisions, you know, obviously not the best decisions a lot of the time. Can you pressure Breeze? Does he make similar mistakes, or is he one of those kind of unflappable guys?
Well, I don't, I think it's hard to say, really. I mean, I don't see a lot of teams pressuring him. Most people, I think, feel kind of like, he's a very, very smart and intelligent quarterback. He knows where to go with the ball. He does a really good job with the cadence and command of the offense. He does all those things. I don't know that anybody can't be pressured, but at the same time, I think you got to, sometimes you're going to do a little, sometimes you're not. It's all going to be kind of based on a lot of different things, based on our personnel that we decide to go with, based on the personnel they have in the game, what their formations are, what their sets are. Some formations are easier to pressure than others. So it really varies. They've done a great job of probably not getting a lot of pressure because they keep everybody so off balance with their formations and their personnel. So, last week was last week. The Jets are just an entirely different type of team than the Saints, and we'll just have to see what direction that we need to go in to try to be successful.
Can you compare the Saints offense to any offense you've seen thus far? Are they similar to the Colts at all in their explosiveness, or are they just an entity unto themselves?
I think they have their own identity. I think they're both very, very excellent offenses. They, one's a multiple formation shift, move around team. The other one barely moves, and it's just as effective. So I don't think you can compare them. I think they're both just very, very good offenses, and both able to move the ball, and both have very, very smart quarterbacks that know where to take the ball.
Can you talk a little bit about Vince Wilfork's play? I mean, most people, they just look at stat sheets and, okay, he had two tackles or three tackles in a game, but obviously it's much more than that, what he's asked to do and things like that. Can you just talk about how well he's playing this year and how well he's filling his role?
Sure. I think he's, I don't watch a lot of other nose guards. I'm too busy watching everybody else's offense. But Vince does a great job for us. We're able to move him around, whether it be at nose tackle or moving out to end. If we need him to move to end, he's a very intelligent football player. Besides being a very good defensive lineman, he's a very intelligent defensive lineman. And generally what happens is on most defenses, unless you get into sacks and some things like that, basically in the running game, if the linebackers are making a lot of tackles and they're not gaining a lot of yards, it's usually because your defensive line's playing fairly well and it's taking a couple of them to block him. And so sometimes you're right. The stat sheet may not show up just as how well somebody will play. They may not have a lot of tackles, but if they're
using up two guys to block them, that means somebody else has a chance to make the tackle. And Vince does what we ask him to do within the scheme, and he does it very, very well. And you know, I can't tell you how much he means to our defense.
Thanks, Dean.
You're welcome.
Dean, how effective is their offensive line, both either in pass blocking or run blocking?
Well, obviously, they're number one offense in the league, so they're pretty good at both, and that's the thing about them. Like I said, they're very balanced. You know, they're averaging 150 yards rushing and whatever it is, two-something passing. So, and I don't think he's been hit a whole lot and hasn't been sacked a whole lot, so you got to say that they're doing a very, very good job.
I was going to say, really tough to penetrate.
Pardon?
They're really tough to penetrate.
Well, I just think they keep, you know, they do a good job with the whole scheme. You know, Sean does a good job, too, of calling the plays and doing formations and keeping everybody off balance. So it's not only the offensive line, it's the scheme. It's Drew putting people in the right spot, getting rid of the ball on time, receivers getting open. And it's never one thing. It's not just all the offensive line, nor is it all just the skill players. It's they coordinated the whole thing together, and that's why they're playing so well on offense.
All right. Thanks, Stacey. Thank you very much. Thanks,
Dean. Dean Pease, Patriots defensive coordinator with members of the media earlier at Gillette Stadium today. Here are some numbers to kind of keep in mind where the Patriots sort of compare and contrast to the Saints statistically.
I do not care about the numbers.
Well, you need to pay attention to these numbers. The Saints obviously lead the NFL in scoring at 36.9 points per game, and that is ahead of the pace of the Patriots set in 2007 when they set the NFL single-season scoring record. They are third in third-down offense conversion at 47%. They're third in the takeaway, the Saints are. Red zone offense, the Saints are fourth in the NFL, converting touchdowns on 65% of their chances. Red zone defense, the Saints' defense is not as bad as you think they might be. Red zone defense, they are fifth in the NFL, allowing just 42% conversion of touchdowns. Conversely, the Patriots are third in scoring offense. Saints are first. Patriots are averaging 29 points per game. And keep in mind, one of those games kind of inflated that total with the 59 they rung up against Tennessee. Patriots are, however, a little bit better statistically on defense. They're just second in the league in points allowed, giving up just 16.4 points per game. Third down offense, the Patriots are sixth in the league, a little behind where the Saints are at 45%. Third down defense, Patriots are right in the middle of the pack, 15th, 37.7%. Turnover margin, the Patriots are number two. The Saints are number three, as the Patriots are a plus 12 in turnover margin. And, of course, here's the bugaboo that I think a lot of people realize is still a work in progress for the Patriots. Red zone offense and red zone defense. The Patriots are a piddling 24th in the NFL in red zone offense, scoring touchdowns on less than half of their possessions in the opponent's red zone. 24th, whereas the Saints are 4th. Red zone defense. The Patriots are near the bottom.
Diddly poo.
28th in red zone defense in the NFL, allowing opponents to score 65% of the time touchdowns. Whereas the Saints defense is 5th. In red zone defense, allowing opponents to score just 42.4% of the time touchdowns. To me, those are the biggest differences between these two teams that seem to be very similar. Patriots certainly, I think, will be able to move the football, should be able to move the football on the Saints' defense. Conversely, I think the Saints will definitely move the ball on the Patriots. It really is going to boil down to what I think is the Patriots' ability to hang on to the football, not turn it over, chew up the clock. My target number would be 35 minutes of possession time on Monday. If they can hold the ball 35 minutes, that means the Saints can only have it for 25. That's 10 less minutes that Drew Brees has compared to Tom Brady to do something with the offense. I think if you can hold the football for 35 minutes, you can probably keep the Saints to less than 30. I think anything short of that, then I think the Saints get an extra possession out of it. I think the Saints probably turn that into 30, 31, 34, 38, somewhere in that range. By the way, Matthew sends his email. He says, get off your fanny and give a prediction already. But he does say happy Thanksgiving. Well, thank you, Matthew. All right, so I'll give you a prediction. I don't like it, kids. I don't like our chances. So I'm going to hope that I'm wrong. But I'm going with the Saints, 34-31. That's what I'm thinking right now.
Field goal, huh?
Field goal. I think the Patriots probably score late to catch up, though. I think it's probably a 34-24 game. Patriots score late, pull within three, probably don't get the ball back. That's what I'm thinking. That's how I kind of see it unfolding. I think that, you know, I do agree with a lot of things that Russell said earlier. In terms of, you know, the Saints defense, I don't know. They're going to have a chance to work on this. Holiday weeks are always difficult. I'm just playing a hunch here. I played hunches early in the year and managed to be successful, but then again, nobody saw, you know, the loss coming to the Colts. I thought the Patriots would kill the Colts. I think most of us thought the Patriots would be able to beat the Colts up, and sure enough, they should have. They had a 17-point lead, you know, in the second half into the fourth quarter and couldn't hold it. I just don't like it. I don't think the Patriots' defense is ready for New Orleans. And what really kind of turned the tide for me in this particular instance was the Patriots' inaccuracies on offense and their lack of aggression and their play calls. Good Lord of mercy, the delay of game calls on top of the indecision in play calls, killing me. By the way, Tom in Bedford sends an email. He says, I think I heard it from Belichick when he was on WEEI. He sort of owned up to it and said it was his fault, I think. Can't be totally sure. My memory is going, he says. However, having said that, Belichick also said that he and Brady thought they snapped the ball in time since the refs don't instantly call delay when the clock hits double zeros. Yeah, I do remember Bill saying that on Monday. But you can't take it down that low. Get it to 4 or 3 seconds and snap the ball, but come on. To take it right down to zeros, it's burned them. What is it now? 3-4 times in the last 2 weeks. Burned them. What does it say? You live by the fire, you die by the fire, right? Okay. Kevin says, John, would you care to hear my nitpick? Here it is. I listen to as much Patriots radio as I possibly can, and I'm tired of Pats fans talking down about our defense. Those guys are playing great. They need to be given credit for what they have done. It is time to admit that we do not have the D we thought we were going to have at the beginning of the year. These guys have far exceeded any expectations that we had and are doing great. Pats fans start realizing that our D is what is keeping us in games. The O needs to pick it up in the second half and manage the clock. The D is on the field too long in the second half. And he says, by the way, John, I'm a huge Nebraska fan. I'm going to take the points that the Big Red will be getting. Sue and the Black Shirts will hold McCoy at bay. I wonder what the spread will be in that Big 12 game. Texas-Nebraska. Game will be at Cowboy Stadium.
You're not supposed
in Dallas.
To gamble on college games, John.
I know. I'm just wondering out loud what the spread will be, though. My guess is Texas by 14, somewhere in the vicinity. Frankly, you know what? I'll tell you what, Kevin. In Illinois here, I would probably take the points in that one too. I don't like the Longhorns and the points in that one. Just my thoughts. Okay. Let me see if I can sneak in a couple of more. Jeremy, sorry if it's already been announced, but what is the broadcast schedule for PFW in progress, Patriots playbook, and fantasy lowdown this week? I think I've said it 3 times. I'm going to say it again. Well, we're at the end of the show, and I kind of saved Jeremy your email for last so I could repeat it again. Okay, tomorrow, no playbook, since we're bugging out here at 2 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow for the holiday. Fantasy Lowdown will be here tomorrow at 2 p.m. It's a taped show, so if you have questions for Brian Lowe, send them in now. Send them in tomorrow morning early because he will be taping the program tomorrow.
We're taping at 8:30, so get the emails in by 8.
Okay, so there you go.
Eastern time.
Doc says get them in by 8 Eastern time. PFW Progress will be here tomorrow from 12 to 2 normal time. Guys will make their NFL picks tomorrow at 1:30. Here live on Patriots.com radio. Thursday, we're off. Friday, Patriots Friday will be here in its regularly scheduled time slot from the guys at WEEI, so that will be as scheduled on Friday. No worries there. And then, of course, we have football on Monday, so Patriots Monday will actually be next Tuesday next week.
And to keep your appetite for the game on Monday night, you can listen to the replay of probably most of the shows from this week and the Patriots Friday interviews on Monday.
How great is that? Frank in Old Hickory, Tennessee, says, typical Rex Ryan attempting to deflect attention from his agenda to injure Brady by saying something about how hurt he was over a passing play when the game was basically won. Rex is no dummy, but he is classless, a classless lout with nothing left to play for. Now mouthing off has gotten him nowhere. What a surprise, as we were complaining about Rex Ryan earlier in the day. That's actually how we started the program. And then James in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina, says, New England has not lost a regular season game to an NFC team in over 4 years and has lost only two regular season games to the NFC teams in 6 years. Clearly, he doesn't believe that the Patriots are going to continue, or he thinks the Patriots will continue, apparently, with that trend on Monday night, as Russell Baxter also pointed out as well. John sends an email. Patriots 38, Aints 29. And Quayo from Aggieland says, John, this is our Super Bowl. Texas is going down.
Oh, my God, that is funny!
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Quayo, even if you are in Aggieland. That wraps up this edition of Patriots Playbook. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone in Patriots Nation. I hope that it's a safe and happy and healthy holiday for each and every one of you. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next week as we recap the Saints and look ahead to the Fins and squish the fish inside the playbook.